Welcome to another episode of the How to Save the World podcast, where we take a deep dive into the academic research and behavioral science of what really gets people to take pro-environmental action and behavior. I'm your host, Katie Patrick. I'm an environmental engineer and designer based in Silicon Valley, California, and I'm the author of the book, How to Save the World. And you know what people ask me? I would say 7 out of 10 of every question I ever get is, drumroll, it is, why do we need to look at individual behavior when what we really need to do is change the system? It is a big, complex, multi-tentacled, not easy to comb out the taxonomy of a good answer. Well, not a good answer, a simple answer to this question, very complex and multivariate. And I ask this question of all of my podcast guests, each of who are expert social scientists and environmental psychologists with published research doing postdoctoral or sometimes their PhD research in environmental psychology. And if there's anyone who could give an answer, it's them. And even they struggle to give a really comprehensive answer. It's usually like a branch or a part or a twig of the whole. I haven't yet met anyone who's been able to really comb through it. And that's because there is no one single answer. The answer has many branches and many ways into dissect what this question and what this answer is really about. And somebody asked me the same question on LinkedIn a little while ago, same question as usual. And every time I get asked it, I kind of think of a new dimension of the answer. And this time, rather than trying to answer the question, what I thought of were the biases that are embedded in the question that make the question perhaps not the right question to be asking. Often the way questions are structured come with embedded biases that make it maybe like not a great question or not ultimately getting to the core issue that you really want to get to. So before you start to answer a question, like maybe are men more intelligent than women or women more intelligent than men? It's kind of like, is that actually the question that we want to be asking? Should we really be phrasing it that way? The question has like embedded problems in it. Or is there a God or is there not a God? Why are we even asking? So I just jotted down these 6 biases in this question that I think untangle the question itself and illustrate why it's maybe not even the best question to be asking at all. And the first bias is it's essentially a false dichotomy. A false dichotomy is a cognitive bias when you take something that has a natural complex systems theory, gray area type of thing, like most things are in life, and you put it into a dichotomy of black and white, also called black and white thinking, good or bad, smart or dumb, healthy or unhealthy. Most things in the world just don't fit into a dichotomy. So especially with this question of individual action versus systems change, why are we even putting this in a dichotomy that there is one or another at all? I mean, when you look at any system, there is a container for the system and all of the subjects of the system are sort of moving around in that. So you can't really have a system without individuals and you can't have individuals without a system. It's very much the one organism, with systems level design influencing the individual actors and the nature of the individual actors also create the system. So let's stop asking this question in a way that there actually is a dichotomy at all between individuals and systems, that we don't all just flow in and out of all of these systems constantly in an organic, interdependent way. The second bias in the question is that it assumes that an individual action isn't a systems influence action. That is, if I'm doing an individual action, it's somehow completely separated from my ability to impact the system. And what I mean by that is that the only realm of actions or behaviors to me is just individual things like composting or recycling or riding a bike or not littering. When you go to a city meeting and you advocate for change, you are trying to change the system. When you are being an entrepreneur and trying to figure out technical solutions to some of our most vexing energy and transportation problems, you are trying to change the system. If you have a job in government or in planning or in politics, or you have the ability to decide how budgets are set and you're making decisions that affect thousands of people, that is your individual action affecting those systems. And what about smaller systems? Like, for example, the apartment where I live. If the building manager here really pushes the building owner to give us EV chargers in our apartment complex, is he engaging in individual change or systems change? He is an individual and he can take it upon himself to be the squeaky wheel to push and push and push to try to get this building owner to do something about this. And that is essentially changing the system of our apartment block. That is a systems level change that we need to have happen in order for all the people that live here to have an electric vehicle. So when we look at all of the systems level changes that get done and need to be done, who is making all those systems level changes? It's individual people who get up every day and do things to make those systems level changes happen. So this question just doesn't allow for that type of answer by putting it into a dichotomy. In my definition of how I would define action or behavior, that every time you do something in a workplace or as an activist that's pushing the system, that is an individual behavior or action. If somebody hired me to recruit 1,000 people to become politically active to make something happen, I would be using all the same action and behavior stuff to try and make that happen. Or if I was trying to change the cultural landscape of a community to allow perhaps an unpopular government change to come through that would be good for the planet, I would still be using all of my action and behavior design frameworks. The third bias in the question is just like lumping something as big as environmental sustainability and social change, all of the actions and all of the systems together. If you really look at all of the things that need to change, there is this massive spectrum of things that range from things that are very, very much in the systems only domain, like does the government build a massive overpass and freeway? That's really only done by the government, although individual people in that role, right down to stuff that really can only exist in the individual domain, like do you grow your own vegetables? Do you try to not eat too much? Do you compost your own food waste with worms and stuff? Do you take the time and attention to teach your children pro-environmental values? Do you choose a career in environmental sustainability and innovation? And then all of these things in between. And you can't just cherry pick one example. People like to take recycling or switching the lights off because they're a couple of the most inconsequential examples. To take this example, and therefore that one example is the same for every single other example. So if we took the switching the lights off, which is a favorite, a love to hate example by the environmental community, and we say, well, telling people to switch the lights off is just like, it's not enough. It's not working. We can't just change all these things through people switching lights off. That is true. But you can't extrapolate that one example. This is where people make the error in the question that because you can't completely change all of the energy systems of the world by switching lights off, therefore all individual action is small and meaningless and is a distraction. And you should only be a full-time activist trying to close power stations or something else that is deemed to be systems changey enough. And that one example, it is not a cookie cutter for all of the other individual actions that people can do. So does that also mean that, well, nobody should ever buy an electric car? Nobody should ever put on solar. Nobody should ever plant their own vegetables. Nobody should ever try and live car-free and walk. Nobody should ever try and regenerate with indigenous trees and pollinating shrubs and flowers, their own properties that they own. Nobody should ever try to come up with new inventions. What nobody should ever try to do anything unless they're working as a political advocate. Like, that's crazy. It totally doesn't make sense. And nobody really believes that. Well, fine, I'll just litter because like one individual person's actions doesn't matter. So I'll just go and throw my trash into the ocean. Nobody believes that. So don't conflate the vast range of actions that are required from every single part of society, every level of system to individual, as if they're all just kind of like the one thing, or there's only two things. There's just the individual and the system. There are so many, and often they don't have that much in common with each other. If I grow my own lettuces and tomatoes, that doesn't have that much to do with whether I drive an electric car or not. It doesn't have that much to do with how good I am as a energy software dashboard designer. And it doesn't have that much to do with whether I give up plastic or not. The only thing in common is the ideology, but the actual practice and the habit of doing it is a totally different realm to the other branches of sustainability. And it definitely doesn't really have that much in common with conservation projects that are very far away from me in forests and in the ocean, really in a very, very distant way. So these habits and actions and behaviors and careers, they just don't have enough in common with each other that we can conflate anything into a question like this. The fourth bias in the question is in the definition of what a system is. What is a system? Anybody who asks this question has to answer that question. What is a system? Is it the government? Is it the physical infrastructure, like the roads and the freeways? Is it the financial models that are around us? The thing is that a system is whatever we define a system to be. A system can be small, medium, large. The boundary of the system is just wherever you place that boundary to be. And what I don't like about the way this system versus individual question is put to us is that it's making the assumption that our homes, our suburbs, our communities, our schools, that these are not systems. My home is a system. A system is something that has inputs and outputs. My individual home, my apartment, it has inputs. It takes in water. It takes in electricity. It takes in food. It takes in materials and stuff that I buy. It takes in packaging, ideally no packaging, but it still takes in packaging. It takes in oxygen from us breathing and it releases waste products. My home releases or indirectly carbon dioxide through the electricity we use. It releases wastewater out of it and sewage. It releases trash. It releases recycling. It releases the carbon dioxide that we breathe. And it releases a certain amount of thermal energy, of temperature, just from our bodies and from living here. So this apartment is a system. When I'm changing the way I behave, I am changing the system of this one apartment. Now, if we bring in all of the other apartments, we are a bigger system. Then we are 200 apartments with all of our inputs and all of our outputs. We are a system. What if I include the whole block and the whole neighborhood? Are we a system then? All of us using all these resources, taking them in and then putting out what we put out. We are a system. Is a school a system? A school is a system. Hundreds of children and teachers and parents taking inputs in, putting inputs out. Then we have a neighborhood, a suburb, a city. So at what stage does this become, in quotes, a system? It's all a system. It's just the way that you define it. And it's really empowering, I think, to think of your home and your street and your neighborhood as its own system, because honestly, that's really the only place where we can probably have a realistic impact. You might be lucky and super influential and be a part of a great team and be able to make some really big national impact happen. But realistically, it's really only in our own neighborhoods and in our own local cities that we'll actually be able to have that real on the ground, measurable, meaningful impact. The fifth bias in the question is that it comes from a place that the individual is always the weak spot and the systems level change is the strong spot. That we don't want to ask individual people to do stuff because the system should be designed to do it all for us. The question is not put to us like systems everywhere are trying to get people to live in this pro-environmental way, but people, individuals, are just not doing it. So this implicit bias in the question is that, oh, people are kind of naturally motivated, but the systems are against us. Well, that's true for some of the things, some of the time, but I tell you what, in plenty of places, you've got people at the systems level trying to push changes, and it is the individuals that are holding everything back. They've got incentives and grants and funding for all of the decarbonization and the environmental work. They've got programs that can be joined. They've got free trees. They set up all the systems and then people don't jump on board. So all the situations span this, whether the individual engagement is the weak spot or whether the government and the systems end is the weak spot. But let's not just assume that things aren't happening because, oh, the system isn't doing it. What about all the individual people who are not allowing the system to take place? The individual people who are still doing all the bad stuff and the individual people who will fight the systems level change. There is systems level change all the time trying to happen, and it is stymied and held back by individuals. So before we cast blame, let's switch it around, do a bit of a switcheroo and really see where the weak points are on what we want to change. If it really is the system, or maybe it is a whole bunch of individuals that are stymieing the system's change, that could easily happen if the individuals got on board. And the sixth and final bias in carving apart this question is that this assumption that these top green tips and these simple individual behavioral actions are meant to transform systems, that when there's a utility saying turn off the lights or a city saying ride your bike more, that somehow that these small individual green actions were intended for the purpose of massive systems-wide transformation. That is not their purpose. They weren't designed for that. So deep green people are often very upset by these small, discrete individual actions saying, how can we transform this massive system? It's going to be like going to the moon landing. Everything needs to be redesigned and revised and redone. And you're just asking me to turn the lights off? I'm like, it's not the right fit for purpose question. These things are not for that. Also, when my daughter's learning to hand write letters properly, like, why are we teaching kids to write handwriting when they should be redesigning the system? It's like, it's not for that. It's like totally separate. They're two different things. You need to think of social change and behavior change like it is a staircase or a funnel or a pyramid or even a bell curve of distribution, like levels. People start with the easy things. And that is the great place where these simple, easy top 10 green tips start for people. Someone can go from having no environmental awareness or attitude and having no experience with these behaviors and just starting to take on these little changes. That is what they're for. They are the beginner level. They are level 1 of 10. If somebody's never done anything before, you can't throw them up to level 10 and say, oh, we expect you to have PhD level knowledge and confidence and social influence skills, and now we're going to just turn society inside out and redesign everything. That would be like taking someone who doesn't work out and is really overweight and just throwing them in with the Olympics. No. We have to start people off where they can start. Like if somebody doesn't exercise and they're out of shape, they're going to start walking around the block, walking up the stairs. That is the place for the top 10 green tips. So let's not hate on them. Let's understand their place as being level 1 on the staircase. And then as people adopt these behaviors, they move up to the next level of the staircase. They take on more advanced environmental challenges, like maybe putting on solar or installing a grey water system. Maybe they join an environmental committee at their job. Maybe then they go and do a master's degree and become a professional in sustainability or climate. Maybe they'll go and join their local city environmental club. But people aren't going to just go from 0 to 100. They're going to start small and then they're going to layer up. And the thing is that that's what all of us did as well. None of us started instantly at level 10. We all started. Every single one of us, we all started at level 1. Even if we were only like 7 years old when we started at level 1, we all started there and then we layered on our expertise, moving up this ladder or these rungs of change. I said I had 6 biases, but I think this note here is probably a 7th one. This is actually not a bias, but it's a fundamental thing to understand in how societies change. It's that if you want to change a big system, meaning a government passes a law that maybe is banning plastic, like banning plastic bags, or going to approve a budget to spend a lot of money on electrification infrastructure or changing a streetscape. Maybe they're taking out parking spaces that some people would like to keep and putting trees in instead. Or maybe they're bringing in a carbon tax or a fossil fuel tax. And this point is really where the rubber hits the road at the nexus between the individual behaviors and sentiment of the community and the systems-wide change. Is that in order to get any of these big systems changes through that we need, you need to have a baseline of environmental support from the community. You need to have everybody in that community harboring a pro-environmental attitude, being ready to take on behaviors and actions. And they have to actually be ready to make some sort of sacrifice, because usually major environmental systems, laws going through, if they didn't require some people to go without something, they would have already gotten through. So the stuff that hasn't gotten through, the stuff that's difficult to get through, require asking people to change, asking people to give up something, like maybe give up disposable plastic. That's very hard for lots of people and businesses to give up. So if you wanted to get something that dramatic through, you need to have a population that is very supportive of that particular lifestyle change. If you can live without plastic easily in your day-to-day life and you're a huge advocate and fan for that, you would totally put your hand up and you say, please ban plastic. Please make it go away. We want to live in a plastic-free city. But for everybody else who relies on it, they're going to fight you down. If everybody in your community is very into saving energy, riding their bikes, living without fossil fuels as much as possible, they really know what it's like to live those behaviors. They are psychologically and attitudinally supportive of anything that reduces our reliance on fossil fuels. When a carbon tax goes through, they'll put their hand up and say, please, yes, we want that carbon tax. I retrained myself how to live without fossil fuels. I'm super energy literate, super energy efficient. I don't need fossil fuels. Yes, I want that carbon tax. But I tell you what, the people who have no idea, they're like, oh my God, you're just going to make it more expensive. I don't know how to do all this stuff. I don't know how to change my home, get off gas, fuels. I've got a big truck. They're going to fight you. They're going to not want it. And we do live in a democracy meaning that people can vote for the politicians that are up for election. And those politicians, they are not going to push stuff through that's hugely unpopular. It's just not how our democratic system works. So this is where this tight relationship between pro-environmental behaviors underpin the pro-environmental sentiment. You can't have pro-environmental behaviors without pro-environmental sentiment. They're both the same thing. The behavior influences the attitude, and the attitude influences the behavior. They're both working together. And you need to have that really taken hold, really taken traction in a community so you can get these big ticket systems-wide changes through. The widespread pro-environmental behaviors and attitudes and cultures are the life raft, are the baseline, are the supporting mechanism that allow the system changes to go through. That is the truth. And these seven biases, these seven concepts, are why I don't think this is necessarily the best question to be asking. But the zeitgeist is now for us to be asking this question, and that is why so many people are asking it. We deeply crave to know the answer. I hope that these seven things helped you get a bit more insight into what this question means and the various ways that we can answer it. I have other podcast episodes also dissecting this complex topic of individual versus systems level change that there is no clear black and white answer to. See if you can find those other episodes in the already published podcasts. And I just wanted to say, I am so appreciative that you are here listening to the podcast, for your interest in environmental psychology, for taking a deep intellectual enthusiasm to try to solve these enormously complex challenges. It's great to be in a community here with you and to have you support my work. And I know how helpful some of these episodes are to you. So please don't be shy of letting me know what you're working on, any episodes that you liked. Send me a direct message on Instagram. I'm at Katie Patrick Hello. Take a screen grab of this episode and you can share it on your stories. This is really important thought leadership we need to get out in the space so we can really deeply understand the social mechanisms of what we're up against. Feel free to rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts and follow on Spotify. And I think there's also a star rating you can click on Spotify as well. And I will see you next week with more in-depth conversations about environmental psychology and behavior.